Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro Macro Small Cap News on Friday, the 15th of May, 2026. I'm trying to get back into the routine. I want to find a format I'm happy with, and I haven't found it. And I will get back into it, you know. When I'm in the mood, I really enjoy doing podcasts. Anyway, what a week it's been, eh? What an absolute nightmare in Westminster again. It's just a farce, isn't it? Can we hold on to a Prime Minister for longer than a year? It's been 2 years or 1 year. It's nuts. It'll be the sixth or seventh Prime Minister we've had in as many years. It's ridiculous. I've got to say, though, it's quite an interesting situation, isn't it, what's happening? Andy Burnham, so, you know, a Labour MP has stood aside, and so it triggers a by-election. Now, this normally happens when an MP dies, you know, so the seat is up for grabs. Now, Reform, you know, only sort of 5,000 seats, I think, behind last time. So they're assuming Andy Burnham. It's basically Andy Burnham, they're saying he's more popular than the last guy, he's more popular than everyone in Labour. If he goes into this seat in Wakefield and loses, the markets are going to have a, you know, have a wobble, because who else is there? Is Angela Rayner or Wes Streeting? Now, Wes Streeting has said, he's come up with this excuse about, oh, you know, I think we should have a, you know, a fuller set of candidates for this PM job, because essentially he hasn't got the support. He's politicians lie. They just lie constantly, don't they? If he had, I guarantee, if he had over 80 Labour MPs supporting him, he'd just gone for it. But he hasn't. Some people are saying he's got half that. So I think we have, you know, so he's just absolute lie. But I know one thing. If Andy Burnham, or maybe even Angela Rayner, get in, our economy is toast. They are more left, you know, socialist facing than, say, Wes Streeting. So Wes Streeting would be better for the markets. But if we, in a no man's land here, if Andy Burnham doesn't get in, then there's more upset, there's more worry, there's more uncertainty. But Burnham or Rayner, lefties, they will spend more, increasing the country's debt, and there's a possibility that the UK will become too much of a risk to invest into. If this happens, there will be a major financial crisis. The country could go broke like it did in 1976, which also happened under a Labour government. Okay, it was part of the problem was Conservatives previously. Now, the cost of servicing, it's just servicing, paying the interest, right? The cost of servicing UK's debt has already reached levels that are not only high by modern standards, but are historically high and rare outside wartime or global crises. Right now, bonds are hitting new highs. The 10-year, I've just gone up, maybe what the 10-year is now, but I've got an alert on it just now, and it's up near 2008 levels. The 30-year is up near 1998 levels. So the 10-year is at 5.145%. They're rising. They're the highest rises in the bond league tables I've got here for all G7 countries. Okay? Now, it's worrying. It's because for the financial year ending March 2026, the UK government spent approximately $110 billion just servicing the debt, just paying the interest. Now, to put that number in context, the UK now spends roughly £3 million every single day to pay interest on its past borrowing. The UK currently spends more on debt, twice as much actually, on debt interest than it does on the defence budget. Is that a crazy situation? They're spending twice as much on just servicing the debt than they are on defence. And it's almost nearly half of what it spends on the NHS, just on debt. That is not productive at all. The UK currently spends more. And so if Rayner and Burnham get in, if Rayner or Burnham, sorry, not Burnham, announce yet more spending at their first budget, this would be a trigger event, I reckon. The markets would calculate that spending and tax plans don't add up, i.e. the deficit will grow uncontrollably. Because we have 2.91 trillion of debt, total debt in the UK. That's 98% of GDP. And the deficit, I mean, basically, if an average household, you know how to manage your finances, right? You've got income coming in and you've got bills going out. Your income has to be bigger than your bills. With the government, it isn't that. We're about minus 132 billion a year down, pretty much, on that. So spending out 130 odd billion more than we're actually taking in tax receipts. Now, if they come out in a budget, if Andy Burnham gets all, Angela Rayner, and they announce more spending, there would be, well, put it this way, the bond vigilantes, this is large investment banks and sovereign wealth funds, would begin selling our bonds, our gilts, simultaneously. Next you get is a yield spike as bonds are dumped. Their price crash and yields soar, jumping by several percent in a day, which is doing right now. This creates a value at risk shock, forcing other institutions to sell their bonds to cover losses, creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. Next, the pound itself, which is dropping, it's down now to a monthly low against the euro and the dollar. So the pound would fall. International investors would dump the pound. Sterling would fall by like 5-10% in days. This makes debt even less attractive to foreigners, who fear their returns will be wiped out by currency devaluation. Finally, the sudden volatility triggers margin calls for pension funds and insurance companies. And of course, a weaker pound means more inflation. So these sort of pension funds and insurance companies are forced to sell more assets to raise cash, threatening the solvency of the entire UK financial system. This is the point where the government loses market access, meaning nobody is willing to lend them money at any price. Once a crisis of this magnitude starts, the solutions are painful and usually involve a loss of political sovereignty. So there's three main sort of fire extinguishers to put this fire out. First is the Bank of England. Our central bank would step in as buyer of last resort. Even if they were trying to reduce their debt holdings by quantitative tightening, because they're selling bonds, they must reverse course and print money to buy gilts to stop yields from rising further. This is inflationary. It saves the bond market but risks destroying the pound, as printing money during a crisis signals the central bank is now funding the government. Number two, fiscal U-turn. The government must immediately abandon the policies that trigger the sell-off. This usually involves emergency budget, announcing immediate deep spending cuts or further tax hikes to prove they are serious about balancing the books. And then personnel changes. Often the Chancellor, even the Prime Minister, must resign to sacrifice themselves to the markets as a sign of regime change in fiscal thinking. Thirdly, if it comes to this, it's very worrying, this is the nuclear option, the IMF bailout. If the Bank of England cannot stop the slide and the government cannot regain market trust, the UK would have to apply to the International Monetary Fund. The IMF provides a massive USD loan to stabilise the currency and pay the interest on the debt. In exchange, the IMF effectively takes over the UK's economic policy. They dictate exactly which taxes must rise and which public services must be cut. This is known as austerity on steroids, and it's a massive humiliation for a G7 nation. However, if there's a positive to this, and that's a massive if, which is not going to be, because there'll be a lot of pain in the rump to this, it is the only thing that I think would stop Labour's delusional belief that spending more using debt is the only answer. It's not. It's the road to ruin. The more debt you build up, the more you have to spend servicing that debt, the less then money you could spend on other things developing the country and growing the country. They'd have to put up taxes. This would mean businesses would suffer. Many would go through. Many would lay people off. There's less then coming in to the government in taxes. And they have higher debts to pay. So they have to issue more bonds. It literally is a vicious circle. drastic action has... The only thing you can do is just cut your cloth and reduce the welfare. It's huge. And it's, and Labour don't see that as a problem. You've had many of these Labour MPs come and say, oh, the bond mockers have to listen to us. No, they don't, you imbeciles. The bond markets are huge. They're bigger than the global stock markets. They are 40 times bigger than the UK economy. You are, at, you know, you have to just, like any household in the UK, like most households in the UK, they act within their budget. We are not. The Labour government don't care about that, it seems. And sooner or later, they will pay the price. Anyway, let's have a look at the markets, shall we? So today, let's look at the FTSE. Start off with the FTSE 100. It is, where is the FTSE 100? It's down 1.26%, 10,241. What about Brent crude? It's up to WTI. S&P yesterday hit an all-time high. I'm glad I got, you know. By the way, I'm writing a little book. It's not going to be long, so almost like a pamphlet, really. It's about how an 18-year-old on minimum wage can retire a millionaire just by investing in the S&P 500, in 10% of their net income into the S&P 500 from 18 years of age to retirement now, which is 68, and they'd have about 1.8 million. And you start doing that then to your sons, daughters, grandchildren, and you can create generational wealth. You need very little, you know, knowledge about investing, but it's the way forward. So if you know someone, a son, daughter, grandchild, you know, whatever, just coming into the world or starting work, advise them to put 10% of their net income into, you know, S&P tracker, because it'll set them up for life. And like I said, you can continue this through the generations and create generational wealth. Anyway, S&P 500 hit an all-time high, 7,501 today. I think it's forecast dropped down a little bit here. Russell 2000's on a bit of a tear, also near highs. NASDAQ at all-time highs, 26,635. What else is there? The FTSE All Share Index down 1.2% to 5,500. The All World Index down 0.5% to 731. The AIM All Share, it's not been faring too badly, actually. It's near sort of January highs. Well, January highs was 832. We're at 809 now. So it's had a bit of a rollover in the last few days, but it was doing well. Brent crude. I've got three prices of Brent here. so I've got the lower prices, $108. I think that's futures, isn't it? Yeah, that's futures. So they're still seeing the future price as a little, in fact, what's that? Brent all cash, $104. Brent futures up 3% today, $108. I posted a little article, or a post on Twitter today about what Trump has done in the Middle East, has done more for renewables than any sort of renewable committee could ever do. The switching to renewables has accelerated, and it's only going in one direction. The amount of solar generation being installed on British households has rocketed. Autotrader now reporting that you can buy an EV car cheaper than an ICE car. And of course, the more people that buy these cars and more infrastructure happens across the country, then the prices go down. And technology is only going to get better with EVs. You know, the car I bought recently, I mean, I think maximum range is 300. Which we don't need 300. I've already just got a granny charger, a slow charger at the moment. We're having a proper charger installed. But literally, it's always, you know, it charges at 2% an hour. So it's very slow. But we don't do a lot of mileage. And most people don't. But 30, 40 miles a day maximum? That's what most people do. So we don't need a lot. So I put on charge for a couple of hours via the sun, via the solar panels. And I just keep it around the 70, 75% charge. That's plenty. That's 230 miles. I don't need that. But this technology will only get better. This mileage, the batteries get better. So, you know, you'll have like ranges up to 400-500 miles in the next few years. It's only going in one direction. But yes, because of the spike in fossil fuels, and it is true. Do you know what? A lot of people criticize Ed Miliband. I do, because he's short-term. He has no idea about, you know, you may as well let companies drill for oil and gas in the short term. In the North Sea, it's not going to harm the UK. It economy. They could make money out of it via tax. But longer term, he is sort of correct. If we do get independence, and by 2030 is the aim to get by almost 90% of our energy, including nuclear, from renewables, then we won't be shaken by oil price spikes around the world, because we'll have our own energy. Now, there's 70 billion worth of investment going into, at the moment, we can produce huge amounts of energy from wind and solar. But the trouble is, the network can't handle it. So wind farms off the North Sea and all that place around Scotland are generating huge amounts of wind. The problem is the grid can't transport it down the south because it's its maximum capacity. So the 70 billion going into that is already putting these pipelines in, these cables that will transfer in the sea and on land down to the south. So it's going to happen, and it's the positive move forward. Like I said, eventually we will become self-sufficient, and we won't be, our energy prices won't spike when there's some kind of war in the Middle East or something. And it happens all the time. And these prices never really come down again. So we've got to stop that. I agree with that. But in the short term, I think he's wrong. Absolutely wrong. There's no reason why, like I said, Norway is still opening new licenses in the North Sea, whereas we're not, and we're buying off them. Doesn't make any sense. But, longer term, I think he is sort of correct in what he's doing. I know people hate that, and it's good to poke fun at Ed, but if you look into it, just go on AI and just look at the investment going into renewables and where they hope to be in 2030. I know it doesn't help bills in the short term, but it will do it over the long term. What else is there? Gold. So gold's dropping a bit from a high. It hit a high, didn't it? $5,400 back in January. It started at $4,500, but it's going sideways, and it sort of ranged a little bit. Anything else there? Let's look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin is trying to break that 82,000 now, but it's rolling over a bit with the markets. The trouble is the stock market tends to, go in an opposite, inverse relationship with yields, bond yields. And I just noted that the American yields are shifting up as well. It's not just the UK, even though the UK is moving faster. So 10-year in America has just popped past 4.5%, which was quite high, and it's the high of the range recently. It was down as much as 3.9% yield, 10-year, but it's now at 4.5, and it's literally, it's a strong gap up today, 1.1% up. So government debt, the cost of government debt around the world is going up, which is not good. Not good for the markets. Anything else? No, that's about it. Okay, I'm going to look at three companies from the Macrocap database, I think. That I think, maybe worth looking into. I'm going to start off with a bigger cap, a mid-cap, I think, Greggs. Who doesn't like Greggs, a cheeky Greggs now and again, They did a trading update. So 16.77 pence. They are 1.7 billion market cap and 1.6 billion enterprise value. Target price is about £19.61. So that's only 17% upside. But once Greggs gets a bit of momentum behind it, it does trade on a high PE. And right now it's trading on a historically low PE. The average PE is about 18, and it's trading on about 13 at the moment. So I'll just give a summary of Greggs here. So Greggs is demonstrating encouraging financial performance with sales growth and improved like-for-like performance in recent weeks. The company is actively pursuing growth through new store openings and menu innovation. Oh, yeah, they mentioned that. What are they looking at there? Menu innovation. They didn't mention that. It doesn't get my lips, licking my lips there. The launch of our new chicken roll. In April, why is this so new? This chicken roll has been a standout, quickly establishing itself as a customer favorite and complementing our iconic sausage roll and vegan roll. We've also strengthened our hot food and pizza offer with introductions such as tandoori chicken pizza slice. I think that's slightly wrong. Do you know what? A lot of people criticize having pineapple on a pizza. I like pineapple a bit. I like sweet and sour or sweet and savory together. I don't know about curries on pizza. I think that is definitely clashing two different continents there, two different cultures. And I don't know if it works out. Expanding the choice with bolder contemporary flavours. New salads launched this week include chicken Caesar salad and chicken, grains and greens. What else is it? I'm going back to the summary here. As well as exploring international expansion opportunities. Oh, yeah, they've expanded into South Tenerife, haven't they? I think, because that's obviously a Brit favourite. And I think they've... where is it? Bear with me. Oh, yeah. So working in partnership with a leading global travel operator, travel retail, at Tenerife South Airport. Tenerife is a destination for millions of the UK and international passengers each year and represents an excellent opportunity to test our offering in international travel hub. That's a key, isn't it? They could open up some areas, shops, you know, with where UKs, a lot of UK hang around, go to holidays or live abroad because, you know, the Brits are loving it. Anyway, I was thinking initially, surely the Middle East will have a problem for them in, you know, food prices, all that stuff. And say, while cost inflation remains a consideration, strategic forward buying of key commodities and energy provides some mitigation. And I think they've got like a minimum of 5 months hedging on some of these prices. The company maintains unchanged expectations for its full-year outcome. Evaluation metrics suggest that Greggs is trading at the lower end of its historical valuation range, and the company is in a position to consider shareholder returns. The operational costs associated with new facility developments are factored into the profit outlook. What do they pay dividend-wise then? They do pay about 4%. Now, looking at the chart, it's quite interesting for Greggs. Because they are at, they're trying to break out here a little bit. This like £17 level is quite interesting. I'd say definitely to break the, you know, uptrend would be £17.80. But yesterday I had a couple of alerts and I raised that. So I would say £17.20, maybe £17.80. If they can get above that and close above that, that would be quite, because they have spiked up to £17.20. If they can close above that, would be quite positive on the price there. Okay, another company to look at. Now, this is a potential recovery play. It's not ready. If you're going in Greg's terms, it's undercooked. And it's in that area. There are certain sectors that you've got to be looking at that will start recovering before you see the economics, you know, recovering or any... The best time to... What I'm trying to say is, in an awkward, ham-fisted way, is the best time to buy good companies are when there's a general sector worry and it's sort of priced in. The worries are priced in, okay? Which means the share price probably won't go any lower. It may do a little bit, but it's already had a sell-off and you've got to be thinking of a time horizon of 2-3 years, you know, of holding. So one of those... worth looking at, I believe, on the beach. They came out with the interim results today. They did downward revised guidance. Now that's in the price, of course, because it's dropped. And it's dropped quite a bit in the last few. I'm not saying this is anywhere near. Well, I don't know. Put it this way. If some kind of deal comes out of the Strait of Hormuz, there'll be many sectors that just rally. For example, house builders will rally because there's the chance that interest rates won't go any higher. And obviously travel companies will rally because I think TUI came out yesterday and mentioned that bookings are 10% down. So On the Beach came out with their results, dropped 18%. And they sort of got to a low of 134. They're now sort of 140. But I'd say it has to get above maybe 150 to see an upward trend here consistently. But I think it's one worth looking at because they are improving. Their numbers are improving. Their app visits are improving. More people sort of getting good repeat customers. And like I said, they've got a healthy balance sheet. Now, be careful about interim results because if you look at the interim results, they look very negative compared to the full year results. That's because with all travel companies, it's very seasonal. And with On the Beach, what they have is a customer trust account. When people book, so they do, On the Beach will do all their marketing, for example, in November, December, January, February, March, because when doom and gloom around, people want to go on holidays, That's when they do all the marketing, all the adverts on TV, and then people book their summer holidays, okay? But because of that, there's a lot of outspend by on the beach. They collect deposits or people pay in full, but on the beach, not allowed to access that until the holidays have been delivered, okay? So you go from a half year, the first half of the year, they go to a net debt position, which they've got, banking facilities there. For example, last year, the results of the 31st of March 2025, they had a net debt position of 29.5 million. This year, 27.5, okay? But then for the full year, they go to a net cash position, like from half year. From last year, they went from a net debt position of 29.5 million to a net cash position of 96.2 million, okay? So it's worth looking at that because it's very much a game of two halves. But overall, obviously, they're gaining for the full year. So I'll just read out the summary here for On the Beach. Summary. On the Beach has experienced a mixed financial performance. While full-year results for 25 showed revenue growth and strong free cash flow, net profit declined. The half-year results for H1 20 indicate a challenging period with declining revenue and a shift to net loss, primarily attributed to demand subdued by Middle East and conflict and competitive pricing. However, strategic initiatives, including app development and expansion into new markets, are showing positive early signs with increased user end engagement and booking volumes. The company maintains a strong balance sheet and disciplined capital management. Future forecasts project a rebound in revenue and net profit with improved margins over the next 3 years. Evaluation metrics suggest the stock is forecasted to become more attractive based on its earnings. The board's reinstatement of FY guidance and confidence in medium-term prospects are positive indicators despite current market headwinds. The company is also forecasting on technological advancements, particularly AI integration. And finally, another last company. It's always had a bit of interest, this company. I've got interest in the technology, but they've always been burning a lot of cash. But it's a company called Seeing Machines, a global company founded in 2000 and headquartered in Australia. It's the industry leader in vision-based monitoring technology that enables machines to see, understand and assist people. So they say they're revolutionising global transport safety, its technology portfolio and AI algorithms, embedded processing and optics, power products that need to deliver reliable real-time understanding of vehicle to operators. Technology spans the critical measurement of where a driver is looking through to classification of the cognitive state as it applies to accident risk. So this is quite interesting. It's almost a transition between, where we are now and autonomous driving. But it's a lot of this goes on in the industrial sectors where there won't be autonomy and big trucks, all that stuff, where, the safety or the tiredness or the awareness of a driver is monitored technically by AI and stuff. Anyway, 5 pence a share. They are market cap 235 million. Enterprise value 251. Bit of a warning. The balance sheet isn't that good. But I go to the summary. But why focus on this is they are forecast to become profitable next year. In fact, it's 2026. The end of year is the 30th of June 25. But I think they may need to raise some funds, so be aware of that. But they are expected to do growth. I'll do the summary here. Here we go. Summary. Seeing Machines is demonstrating a strong growth trajectory driven by regulatory changes in the automotive industry, such as the EU General Safety Regulation, or the GSR. The company has seen substantial increase in automotive production volumes and royalty revenue, with a positive outlook driven by these regulatory tailwinds. Margins are improving, and while the company has faced profitability challenges in the past, forecasts indicate a shift towards positive adjusted EBITDA and increased net profit. The balance sheet has been strengthened with new funding facility to manage working capital. Evaluation metrics are projected to improve significantly as the company moves into a period of forecast growth and profitability. Brokers remain optimistic with buy rating and a target price implying significant upside potential, suggesting that current forecasts may prove conservative. The company's technology, leadership in advanced computer vision and AI-powered operator monitoring systems position it well for future market expansion within both the automotive and aftermarket sectors. So what was the last set of results? 31st of the 12th. Yeah, they had net debt 37.7 million. There's quite a few orders coming through, but just check the balance sheet. But I think once they can satisfy the worry on the balance sheet, I think it could do quite well, because it's looking at, I'll give you an example. So looking at 66% top line growth for 26 to £76.4 million and net profit of £14.9 million. Puts on a PE 16. Now, 2027, that's expected to dip a little bit to top line by 4% dropped to £73.3 million. And net profit drop 48% to 7.8. But for 28, the rebound is quite good. 26% top line growth to 92.1 million, and net profit expected to grow 113% to 16.7 million. That would put them on a PE of 14 for a tech company like that. That's quite good. But again, there's balance sheet concerns. But I think the technology is very interesting. So that's Sea Machines. Ticker there is SEE. Broker's got a nine pence target, which is 80% upside here. Like I said, nothing is or should be regarded as investment advice on this podcast. Have a nice weekend. Hope it goes well. And we'll probably have loads of more political shenanigans over the weekend. But have a cracking weekend. Don't forget, sharepickers.com, if you listen to the first time. It's hundreds of companies. I focus on small cap, micro cap companies, because historically that's where the growth comes from. There are profitable or about to become profitable. So the upside potential is multiples. But check it out if you're not a member, sharepickers.com. And like I say, if you buy the book that I released last year now, then you can get 40% off the club, which is the price of literally a jumbo Savile sausage on a daily basis. That's what it works out to. Of course, you wouldn't eat a jumbo sausage on a daily basis, hopefully. Or jumbo Savile. Imagine that, eating a jumbo Savile. There's probably someone in this country, isn't it? You know, one of these people end up in the sun. I've eaten 365 jumbo Savile this year. I'm going to beat that next year. Anyway, check out sharepickers.com. Have a nice weekend. Speaking next to Wiki, muchos apreciados.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.